Hey, welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks so much for finding us again this week. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and looking forward to continuing our tour across the NFL landscape, reviewing the offseason of all 32 teams. Up today on our series is Joel Erickson, Talking Saints, Joel Erickson of The Advocate, and John McClain, our good friend at the Houston Chronicle, Talking Texans, and excited to bring you those great interviews here shortly. Before we do, as I do every week, I need to remind you at the top of the program to head to iTunes and subscribe. I trust by now you already have subscribed, but it's just kind of part of this gig. I have to say this every week, so I apologize if I sound like a broken record. But in the event that I catch one or two of you that has been slacking and has not already headed to iTunes and not only subscribed, but also left us a rating and a review, well, now's your opportunity. We would really love it. We are kind of what we're coming up on halfway. I guess we're a little over a third of the way across our plan to review all 32 teams this offseason. So coming at you once per week. And the best way to ensure that you never miss a podcast is by heading to iTunes and getting in on the fun. So thank you for that. And, you know, some big news across the NFL. I guess the way I'll do it is I'll just kind of point you toward what we have up at our website, because I think we're doing a pretty good job hitting covering all the bases. Put away We Hear It late Wednesday night up on Colin Kaepernick and the explanation or what's going on behind the scenes that has kept him unsigned here as teams approach mini camps next week. After the Seahawks passed on Cap, said no thanks, we'll take Austin Davis instead, even though Cap is a starter, championship caliber starter, according to John Carroll. We do think it's very likely to take an injury at this point to get Cap into an NFL locker room. I think it's a shame. That's just my personal opinion. There's no question in my mind that he is one of the top. I think he's probably one of the top 32 when you look at the Tom Savages or the Mike Lennons or the whoever's going to start in Cleveland. He's probably a better option than those guys, but most certainly he is a top 64 and without question in my mind a top 40 quarterback in this league. So a lot more to it than just his football ability, although that is the thrust of the Way We Hear It item we put on. That is what the majority of sources continue to tell us, is that he's just a man without a fit, not a classic pocket passer, of course. And teams, I guess, value the ability to have continuity if your starter goes down, to at least have system continuity. I never really understood it. I thought if your system breaks, meaning your starting quarterback, that structure breaks down, it'd be nice to have a backup who can win outside of the typical structure. But I don't know. That's not how NFL teams see it, I guess. So we're not going to stop talking about Colin Kaepernick. So anyway, that's the latest up at ProFootballWeekly.com. Greg Gabriel, our great longtime NFL scout, has his latest offensive tackle review up there now as well. He's doing such a good job breaking down some of the top 2018 draft eligible prospects. Yesterday, Wednesday, he took a look at Texas offensive tackle Connor Williams. Also did Notre Dame's Mike McGlinchey this week, so make sure you check out those scouting reports. We were out at the Bears OTA on Tuesday. I wrote on Mitch Trubisky. There's a story there. I've also written a couple columns about the wide receiver market getting a late unexpected jolt with Jeremy Maclin's release last Friday and Eric Decker expected to be released if he hasn't been already by the Jets. So it was a weird offseason for wide receivers. You had Pierre Garçon getting paid big and Kenny Stills got a nice payday, and then for whatever reason the younger guys with higher ceilings and Alshon Jeffrey and Terrell Pryor both settled for 1-year deals. And then you've got the early wide receiver run in the draft I don't think anyone saw coming. And all three guys, you got two of them coming off surgery, and Corey Davis and John Ross, of course. And Mike Williams is already sidelined out in San Diego, or out in L.A., I guess it is now, with a back issue. So it's been a tough offseason, I think, at the wide receiver position. Maybe it shows you now why the Patriots went ahead and traded for Brandon Cooks. But nonetheless, I think in 29-year-old Jeremy Maclin and 30-year-old Eric Decker, Any team in the league that has a wide receiver void is not doing themselves. They're doing themselves a disservice. If they're not kicking the tires on these guys, I believe they can still both be really productive players. And I think this is a unique situation to see a couple guys five 1,000 yard seasons combined over the past 5 years. To become available at this juncture, and they both bring some versatility. Macklin has a little bit more speed. Decker's gonna be a little bit better in the red zone. So I kind of break down all that in my column, but I am sticking with my prediction from there that Jeremy Macklin ends up with the Bills and Eric Decker goes to the Ravens, who I think need help as much as anyone. Those are kind of some of the big stories of the week. And again, we've got them all covered at profootballweekly.com. So hopefully you have that bookmarked by now and are heading over there frequently. We've also got a lot of good fantasy football stuff, of course. My colleague and friend Kevin Fishbane in the middle of his Fresh Start series, looking at all the veterans who have switched teams this offseason. So I thought it'd be fun. I did a post yesterday, a little feature on the coordinators, some of the big play callers that have switched teams and what it may mean for those clubs and the fantasy studs on those clubs. So I hope you'll check that out as well. That's what's happening at PFW. And before we launch in with Joel Erickson of The Advocate, I do just want to reintroduce you to our great friend and our sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming, offering an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionista, then try Loot Wear, monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Want to geek out your pet? Try Loot Pets. I've got three of them here, and they are all Loot Pets. So we hope that you will check some of that stuff out as well. We've got a great offer for you here, too. It's valid through June 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific. Basically, if you want to be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw, enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. And I, of course, have to mention June's Loot Crate theme is Alter Ego. So some great franchises in there, including Spider-Man, Transformers, The Hulk, and DC Comics. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So Loot Crate's been on fire recently. It was Guardians of the Galaxy last month. April, I believe, was Investigation. They had Stranger Things in there and Goonies last month. So lots of great, great franchises. And now with Spider-Man and The Hulk, DC Comics, they've got some real iconic stuff. So make sure you check out the best surprise you know is coming. One more time, lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. Make sure you do it today. You only have until June 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific. Thank you once again to Loot Crate, and let's talk with Joel Erickson. Let's talk a little Saints football with the Advocate's Joel Erickson right now. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we head to New Orleans, where Joel Erickson, the Saints beat writer with The Advocate and also the author of the Saints Scouting Report in the Pro Football Weekly 2017 Preview Magazine, nice enough to take some time out and chat a little Saints. What's happening, Joel?
Well, it's been pretty rainy down here in New Orleans for about a week and a half, so you can tell summer's here.
All righty. What do you think, and if you're not following Joel on Twitter, let me just say quickly, you should definitely do that, at Joel A. Erickson. Make sure you check out his work there. And let me just start out, Joel, by saying, let me borrow a line from Jeff Fisher. You probably heard it before, but three straight 7-9 seasons for the Saints, four out of the past 5 years, I believe. Do you think this offseason has positioned them to avoid that 7-9 you-know-what for a fourth consecutive year?
Well, you know, it's really hard to tell. The big thing with the Saints for the last several years now has been major summer injuries, and there's a couple hanging out there right now, one in particular that is really concerning in defensive tackle Nick Fairley. The Saints have made a bunch of upgrades elsewhere, but the one position they didn't hit really was edge rusher, and Nick Fairley last year was really the best, a really good second option as a pass rusher next to Cam Jordan. And if he's if his heart condition becomes a problem, which we really don't know, That seems like a big hole for the defense.
Okay, I hate to play revisionist history or anything like that, but I'm going to be honest. My concern with the Fairley deal when they did it this offseason, I believe 4 years and $28 million after he had a great debut in New Orleans last season, it wasn't about any heart condition because I didn't know, obviously. I don't think many people did. But he's been a guy throughout his career who's been he's played better when he's had reason to kind of stay really motivated. So I guess that was my bigger concern with the signing. But let's say and hopefully Fairley doesn't have any issues and he's able to get back quickly. If he cannot, who does the onus fall on? I mean, I'm sure Sheldon Rankin's the first overall pick from last year, but who would be the next guys up that would have to kind of fill in with more pass rush?
Well, it's Sheldon Rankins, and then at defensive tackle, they'd be hoping for a similar jump with Rankins from David Onyemata, who played a lot of snaps and had pressures last year, but it's still a really raw prospect coming out of Canada. On the outside, then you look at can they get Alex Okafor to return to his 8-sack form with the Cardinals? Can Haole Kakaha's knee? Can he recover from his third torn ACL? And the other thing is, this is Dennis Allen. He's going to bring pressure. He came up in Greg Williams' school. So if they can't get pressure, I think you're looking at guys like Kenny Vaccaro and Donnell Ellerbe coming on blitzes quite a bit to provide that pressure and try to make up for Fairley in the pass rush. But, obviously we don't really have any idea what Nick Fairley is facing right now.
Yeah, that is a scary situation, and again, we certainly hope for the best for him. I want to talk about the defense, obviously, and we'll do that here in a minute with Joel Erickson, but let me just ask, it's a contract year for Drew Brees, I believe, unless I missed something. I believe he's going to play out a contract year. Can you just explain what that dynamic is like for, if not the most famous saint of them all among them, and then how he and Sean Payton are really, you would think, kind of tied at the hip, and there have been rumors the past couple off seasons about Sean Payton's future as well.
Well, given Brees' stature, you would think that this is a unique situation for him in New Orleans, but really Saints fans have been through this with Brees basically every time his contract has come up in his career. This always goes down to the wire, and I think the thing this year was they signed the deal knowing that he was going to go in and play out this year, and they're going to figure it out after the season, because Brees doesn't want to have to go through what he went through last year, where his contract was a subject of much discussion and much speculation all summer and really all the way up into training camp. So it's a decision on his part that he wants to, and obviously with the Saints too, but it does give the Saints some flexibility. You know, great quarterbacks, Brees is at 38, and great quarterbacks, once they get up there, have a way of, you just never really know when they're going to decline. It seems to come suddenly. So the Saints obviously have the option if they don't want, if Brees has a fall off or something, and I'm not saying that there's any signs that he would, but there's not. If you look back at a lot of great quarterbacks, there's not really a sign. They play really well, and then the bottom drops out. So The Saints have the option to move forward, not only if something goes wrong with Brees, but if this team goes 7-9 and 6-10 or something like that again, and they decide they want to move in another direction and start really earnestly rebuilding everything, then they can do that.
Okay. Just your gut instinct, do you think the Saints would have drafted Pat Mahomes if he was there in the first round and the Chiefs didn't make the move up to draft him? I know there was a lot of rumblings about some interest. What have you been able to glean on that?
I think that all depends on who Buffalo picks at 10. Mm-hmm. If Buffalo picks Marshawn Lattimore, which when you hear the Saints talk after the draft, they weren't expecting Marshawn Lattimore to be there, and I think everybody pretty much had a corner projected to go to the Bills, and they ended up taking one later. So I think the Saints figured there's no way, even if Lattimore falls, that he gets past that 10 spot. I think Mahomes was the next pick.
Okay.
I think that's what we've been able to glean from everything that's been said afterwards. But as long as Lattimore was there, Mickey Loomis flat out said if it came down to Lattimore and Mahomes, they would have gone with Lattimore. Lattimore was the third-rated player on their board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. We're chatting with Joel Erickson, the Saints beat writer for The Advocate. You can also check out his work, his Saints scouting report, in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine that will be available on newsstands next week. And let's stick with the offense for another minute. It's been fascinating, certainly, with the signing of future Hall of Famer Adrian Peterson. The Saints move up in the draft to take their new satellite back and Alvin Kamara. What do you sense? And they had a lot of success with Mark Ingram on the ground last year. I know Sean Payton's always going to run a pass-heavy offense with Drew Brees, but do you think they're setting themselves up to maybe take a little bit more off of Brees' plate and potentially take the air out of the football a little bit?
I think that, I think that maybe not. I don't. It's hard to predict that they'll ever take the air out of the football mm-hmm. when it's New Orleans. But I do think that there is maybe more of an emphasis on the running game, given Peterson's addition, and really the other two additions that you didn't mention, but that sort of point to it. Are guys like Larry Warford and the drafting of Ryan Ramczyk. I mean, Ramczyk comes from an offense at Wisconsin that everybody knows is running one. Warford's kind of a big-bodied, you know, huge guy.
Right.
And so that right side of the line has the potential in the future to be more of a road-grading group than it has been in the past. Now, I don't know if that necessarily comes into play this year, Ramczyk coming off the hip and Zach Stree still playing well. But the thing is, this is an offense that was much better running the ball last year than it had been the year previously. They averaged about a half yard better per carry. Ingram ran for over 1,000 yards. And the thing is, if the defense – the big thing is if the defense doesn't take the big leap forward that they've been trying for years to make, maybe you can control the clock a little bit better and keep some teams from going off – you know, I think the first game that pops into my mind is last year's season opener against Oakland when the Saints get out to a big lead and Oakland comes back in the fourth quarter. If you have Adrian Peterson and Mark Ingram going back-to-back and closing that out, right, maybe Derek Carr doesn't get as many chances.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. What a fascinating backfield it is. Let's stick with it for just a moment here with Joel Erickson. How has Mark Ingram handled this? You mentioned he's coming off 1,000 yards for the first time. He seemed to take major strides in terms of the passing game part of his game. How has he handled the presence of future Hall of Famer Adrian Peterson? And how is Peterson adapting to changing teams for the first time in his illustrious career?
The hard thing is that we haven't gotten – Ingram's been nursing a minor injury and in OTAs, and Peterson has been – our availability has been the last day of OTAs, and Peterson has been leaving to go home almost immediately after. So we haven't actually gotten to talk to either of them since summer workout started. Now, previously speaking, Ingram has said all the right things about, you know, whatever it takes to win. You know, he's always shared carries in this backfield, and so that's what we have there. But we obviously, I don't think we're really going to know how that situation plays out until we're in the games. Peterson, on the other hand, people are raving about him. I mean, basically talking about him as if he's a Greek god in terms of physical stature. Mm-hmm. Raving about his first step, saying he looks like he's young, and he's actually caught the ball in the OTAs that we've seen, I guess, better than you would think from his reputation. So he's a guy that kind of has the whole Saints camp in awe now. And I think we've seen it with Peterson. You never know with running backs, but until we see something different, when he's been healthy, he's been productive.
Yeah, no doubt. If there was ever a 32-year-old running back that I would not be ready to write off, it would be Peterson, even after coming off the lost season, really his second out of the past 3 years with the meniscus tear and ineffectiveness before that. Talking defense, what do you think about Marshon Lattimore, P.J. Williams coming back? You've got the Saints have some impressive players on the rise, I think, on the back end of the secondary with Vaccaro and Von Bell. Do you see enough playmakers suddenly? I believe they were like 27th in both sack and interception percentage a year ago. How do these guys sort of fit in, and do you think they have enough added juice to be more competitive on defense?
I think the secondary is essential to basically everything, provided that Fairley gets this heart thing worked out and comes back. The Saints struggled to get sacks last year, but in terms of quarterback hits, they were among the top five teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And they've had cornerback depth chart get annihilated by injuries the last two seasons. And you think, okay, if T.J. Williams can stay healthy for the first time in his career, you know, he was a guy who was starting to really show some stuff when the season started last year before a horrific concussion.
Right.
If Marshawn Lattimore plays well, if the safeties and the addition of – I actually really like second-round pick Marcus Williams as a guy to play center field and let Bell and Vaccaro kind of roam underneath. So I think there's a I think there's a chance there that maybe some of those quarterback hits turn into sacks if the coverage is there right off the snap.
Sure. Is Dennis Allen the type, do you think, that would roll with like a kind of a big dime package to get three safeties on the field? I don't know if he's had the personnel in the past to do it. You tell me. But like you said, with Williams coming on board and with Bell and Vaccaro playing well, do you think that's a kind of an alignment we could see more of?
Well, it'd be hard to see more of it. After all the corner injuries last year, they played three safeties on just about 75 to 80% of the snaps.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Well, Jarris Bird was playing that role last year, but Jarris Bird really at this point in his career can't roam center field the way you'd need to really make that work. Marcus Williams might be able to, and from what has looked very interesting early in the first couple practices we've seen. But yeah, no, that's definitely something Dennis Allen could do. I think in Dennis Allen's perfect world, if everybody's healthy, I think there's a chance that you see the Saints do a whole bunch of different things to the point where you can't even really identify a base defense or a base nickel.
Interesting. We're chatting with Joel Erickson, the Saints beat writer of The Advocate. And let's get back to Drew Brees and the offense here for a minute. You know, turnover among his artillery or his weaponry is certainly nothing new for Brees, whether it's Jimmy Graham or Darren Sproles, Marcus Colson. We know the story year after year. How do you think he adjusts to losing Brandon Cooks, the latest sort of change, and what does it mean for Michael Thomas and his rising star and how much higher it can go in short order?
Well, I think the short answer is, and I don't know if it's necessarily popular down here, but I really think that Ted Ginn doesn't necessarily fill the production of Brandon Cooks, but I think he fills the role that Brandon Cooks played in the offense of taking the top off and letting people work underneath.
Right.
And Michael Thomas, from what we saw in his first year, is a more complete number one than Brandon Cooks is. He's actually better after the catch than Cooks was. I think this is a guy who, as long as he's going to be in this offense, I think he's got a chance of being a top 10 receiver in the league for a long time.
Wow.
So, you know, it's hard to predict better than 92 catches and 9 touchdowns and everything he had, but I would expect him to sort of cement that place in the NFL and cement those stats as something you can expect from him.
Okay, I hope fantasy football players are listening. We'll try and hit on that a little bit more in the end, spending a couple more minutes with Joel Erickson. You said it's hard to predict better than that fantastic rookie season for the Ohio State product. I would guess that you'll agree it's not hard to predict more from Kobe Fleener in year two with the Saints. Where is the team at in terms of, you know, just assessing his debut and what more they expect to see from him this season?
You know, that's actually one, you know, if production was, I don't know what the right word is there, but I don't know that you're going, the hard thing with the Saints, especially from a fantasy perspective, is that other than the guys at the top of it, it's really hard to predict what guys are going to do game to game.
Mm-hmm.
And Fleener, for whatever reason last year, never really took over the role that we saw Ben Watson take over when Jimmy Graham was gone the year before. You know, Ben caught 74 balls. Fleener didn't come anywhere close to that. And I don't necessarily know that you're going to see a huge change there. I could be wrong. They could find a different way to use him. But I think that tight end role really requires a guy to make a lot of contested catches. And he didn't do it that well last year. At least from what we saw. I think the role that's most interesting is Alvin Kamara in that satellite back role, because it's been a while since the Saints have had a true home run hitter there. And so that's a position that, in terms of catches, in terms of impact, has probably been underperforming the last couple of seasons.
It is fun to think about an exciting talent like Kamara coming out of Tennessee with Sean Payton, and a brilliant offensive coach who has a specific role for him that you just kind of hit on. What about the offensive line? You mentioned Larry Warford, good player, and does bring some mauling potential to the right side. It sounds like, do you think Streif holds off Ramczyk? Is that an open battle? What happens there? And then what about at the pivot with Max Unger, if you could just fill in the listeners on his health and what maybe the contingency is there?
The Saints believe that Unger will be back near the end of the preseason, and obviously he'd slot back in. So if he meets the team's predictions, I think you'd expect Max Unger to be back there. If he can't meet the team's predictions, you're probably looking at veteran Josh Larrivius or Senio Kelemete. I lean towards Larrivius just because they like Kelemete's versatility as a sixth man. He can basically play any position on the line, and you don't want to give that up necessarily. Right tackle is interesting. Ramczyk has been ahead of schedule in his recovery. If that's true, then he'll be able to go through training camp. The thing is, Zach Streif played really well last year. He's a guy going into his 12th year in the league, but he's a guy who is a backup for most of his first 5 years, so he didn't have maybe as many miles on him in his 12th year as somebody else. And, they played a who's who of guys rushing off of his side last year, Khalil Mack and Von Miller and all those guys, and really stonewalled most of them. So it's hard to predict against him, but the idea is that Ramczyk will take over for Streif, if not this year, then in the future.
Okay, yeah, to get him with the 32nd pick, too, the one that the Saints got in the Brandon Cooks trade would seem to be a terrific value. I'm guessing they didn't think there was any chance he was going to be there. Just another minute or two with Joel Erickson, and just curious to just hop back to the corner position real quick. We mentioned the Patriots trade, and obviously there were the flirtations with Malcolm Butler before they have Lattimore fall into their lap. How do you imagine that depth chart shakes out, and what are the early, very early kind of returns, or what are you hearing on Lattimore and how he's sort of fitting into things?
I think the best guess is probably Bro and Lattimore on the outside, and then PJ Williams and Sterling Moore playing the inside. We've already seen PJ play a little bit inside. He did that a lot his rookie year before he got hurt in the preseason. Lattimore, we haven't heard a ton on yet. It's a little harder. We don't see as much OTA-wise as some of the other guys.
Okay.
But he's been working in with the first team. He has been working in with the first team, which isn't something you see from the other rookies. So I think that's a guy that you expect to be in the mix and playing, if not necessarily when they're in base defense, then definitely when there's three cornerbacks on the field, which, as we all know, in the NFL is 100% of the time now almost.
Yeah, no doubt. And Joel, I have to laugh. I just got back from the Bears OTA, and I've heard some of the stories about the access in New Orleans, and I promise you it's nearly as bad in Chicago. So we have to get creative with the way we're able to report all this stuff. I totally get it. Before I ask you for a fantasy football nugget on the way out, let me just – and I don't want you to have to get out over your skis and make any predictions you're not comfortable with. I'm not asking you for record or finish in the division. But what about Drew Brees? We haven't seen a potential free agent hit the market of his stature, obviously, since Peyton Manning. What does your gut tell you as far as Brees and if he's able to finish his career at the Saints?
I guess this really isn't going on a limb, but I think a lot of it depends on what the Saints do this year.
Right.
I think if there's improvement and they're fighting for a playoff berth and there's a chance they can make a run at it, I think they figure something out. I think what I said earlier, if the record isn't what they want again, I think there's more of a chance after 4 years of it that things, they move on from that era and try to rebuild from scratch.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And lastly, I think we did a decent job. I'm guessing, you correct me if I'm wrong, but if I had to guess, most improved position, it's probably running back, and biggest concern is pass rush. Am I getting a read on what you're telling us here correctly?
Yeah, I would definitely say both of those things. Running back, Tim Hightower was good last year, but it's hard to compare Tim Hightower to Adrian Peterson. They didn't have the satellite option. So, and then the pass rush, there's just a lot of ifs there right now at this point in the summer that we don't know about.
Okay. And then just lastly, and thank you again so much to Joel Erickson. Check him out on Twitter at Joel A. Erickson. And of course, in The Advocate and in the Pro Football Weekly 2017 Preview Magazine. You told us already, it's tough for fantasy football players to know on a week to week basis. It's kind of like the Patriots and a couple other offenses. But whether it's a sleeper or one guy you feel really comfortable hanging your hat on, just throw a fantasy football nugget to the listeners so they have something to chew on here.
I would say don't sleep on Willie Snead.
Yeah, love it.
You know, he's a guy who maybe you don't necessarily think about as a big time guy, but he's been right around 70 catches 2 years in a row. And with Brandon Cooks gone, I think he's going to be a very clear number two here. And I would say don't sleep on Willie.
All right, very good. That is Joel Erickson of The Advocate. We really appreciate his time today, and hopefully, if you're open to it, Joel, we'll get you back once the season gets underway and talk a little bit more Saints.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
All right. Thank you once again to Joel A. Erickson on Twitter. Check him out in The Advocate and at Pro Football Weekly in the 2017 Preview Magazine.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, thanks so much to Joel. A fascinating team the Saints are. You know, I think that the way that they've been compiling defensive talent, maybe they have an opportunity to sneak up on some people a little bit, you know, and it's such a big year. We talked about, you know, the potential winds of change blowing with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. You've got a Hall of Famer coming in and Adrian Peterson, Michael Thomas, who many people think is going to be the next star in this league. I mean, he's already on the precipice of that, a big opportunity for him. But of course, it is that defense and whether they can just make more game-changing plays, apply more consistent pressure, and get anything from some of these recent high picks that have been slowed by injury in addition to some of the new guys coming in. So an interesting team, and thanks again to Joel for taking time to break it all down. We move next to Houston, where John McClain is ready to talk some Texans, another fascinating team that obviously made a bold move at the quarterback position and already has a defense that it doesn't have too many concerns about, even though there has been a lot of turnover this offseason. So let's let the expert break it down. Bringing in right now John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, it is my great pleasure to welcome in John McClain, the longtime beat writer of the Houston with the Houston Chronicle for the Texans. Follow him on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. John, what's happening? Thanks so much for joining the program again.
My pleasure, Arthur. I'm happy to do it. We're getting close to vacation. I know the teams are in their mini camps. Texans have their mini camp next week, and then next time I see them will be at the Greenbrier in West Virginia, where they've moved training camp to replace the Saints, who didn't renew their contract after 3 years. So it will be the first time since my first training camp in 1977 that I will be with a Houston team in which the weather wasn't miserable, and I can't wait.
There you go. Very cool. That is awesome. John has been doing this for a long time, so it's neat that he's still crossing firsts off the list, too. Where does the Deshaun Watson dynamic fit in for you? Been doing it a long time. I'm sure you've covered a number of first-round quarterbacks, but I know there also has to be an excitement because this feels like maybe it was a little bit overdue for Houston to make their move at the position.
First of all, Arthur, I was shocked when general manager Rick Smith traded up 12 spots.
Mm-hmm.
He only gave up a number one to get a quarterback that I had going to the Jets in the first round and thought was the best quarterback in the draft. And I know there were obviously the Bears like Mitchell Trubisky and the Chiefs like Patrick Mahomes, but the Texans also like Mahomes. But, you know, nobody accomplished more in college than Watson did.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him obliterate Alabama in the last two national championship games with his arm and his feet and his mind, now you can't be unimpressed with this kid. He needs time. He's not going to start anytime soon. Tom Savage is the starter. They're not going to rush him in until he's ready.
Mm-hmm.
He's picked everything up really well mentally. He stays after practice working with different rookie receivers. I like that. And if Tom Savage were to get hurt early in the season, I think it would be Brandon Whedon, and I don't think Watson would play anytime soon. But the reason is Bill O'Brien, he's trying to win again. He's had three consecutive winning records. They've won the last two division titles. They're trying to win another division title. You don't throw a rookie out there and let him struggle and lose while you watch him grow, and because they're trying to win. People around the country are like, well, why don't they just play Watson? When's the last time a team with a winning record trying to repeat as division champions put a rookie out there?
Yeah,
you know, the Cowboys were coming off a terrible record, and they had no plans to play Dak Prescott till they were forced to. Russell Wilson, they were, I believe, the Seahawks had a losing record the season before he got there. Now, Russell Wilson picked it up faster than anybody, as you know,
mm-hmm.
and maybe Watson will do that, but I think they're going to give him a lot of time, make sure he's ready to play when he plays, and the part of the package they've given him, they give him a little at a time and expand it when he is able to take in the classroom onto the practice field. But people are really excited about the possibility of him, whether this year, next year, where he becomes great. People are so excited to have a quarterback here who was highly rated and who they moved up to get. And because think about it, O'Brien's played 10, started 8. Each of his starters in the first 3 years has been benched. Savage has been hurt in each of his first 3 years playing sparingly. So I think at some point the odds are Watson will play. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, no question. He's the future. And, John, we at Pro Football Weekly had him ranked as the first quarterback as well. I guess by the end of the day, we may have been in the minority on that. But I also thought it was a very nice move for them to be able to do that with him being the third off the board. I guess if he's the present, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask just your thoughts. You're way too early. The guys haven't put pads on. They're not digesting defenses, anything like that. But where's Tom Savage's head at going into this season that likely is his, you know, where he's penciled in as the starter? Not likely, but for sure.
Think about this. He is in the last year of his contract. He has a baby in the last year. He got married in the last 2 years. He has a chance, if he stays healthy and play well, to make millions and millions of dollars. It is a great opportunity for Savage. And people around the country are like, oh my God, why would they play this guy? He's never thrown a touchdown pass. Well, when they've seen him, they've been impressed with what they saw, not just in games, but in practice, in the meeting rooms. He knows the system inside and out. Unlike Brock Osweiler, he can handle Bill O'Brien's tough love coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So can Brandon Whedon, you know. But O'Brien and Osweiler just never meshed from the get-go. But Savage understands him. He wants to be coached hard. So if he doesn't make it, it'll be because he's either injured or because he is a disappointment, which they don't expect. And another thing to consider here, Arthur, they don't ask their quarterback to go up and down the field throwing 50-yard, 20-yard passes. They want their quarterback to be a game manager. And that sounds like a journeyman, and if that's what it is, that's what it is. And O'Brien's first three seasons, the Texans have run the ball more than any team in the league. They drafted running back Deontay Foreman in the third round to pair with Lamar Miller. So the odds are Bill O'Brien's going to keep that same philosophy, and they're going to run it a lot. So they want the quarterback move the chains, convert in the red zone, don't turn it over. Osweiler committed that sin. He just could not keep from throwing interceptions. And that drove them crazy. And so Tom Savage, he's got to stay away from interceptions and play really smart with the ball.
Very good. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, and you mentioned kind of the game manager title. I don't think there's any shame in it. I know it has a stigma with some, but when you have the type of the defense the Texans do and the other things going well, it makes a lot of sense. Let's talk about a couple of those other components. What about the run game? What were the feelings on Lamar Miller? He handled a big workload. He wasn't quite as explosive as he was in Miami, but thoughts on Miller's debut, where he's at, how he'll pair with Foreman and the guys they'll be running behind, because I know the O-line came up a little bit short as well last year.
Lamar Miller carried a career high 268 times, and he was banged up a lot. That's one reason they drafted Deontay Foreman, who had the second most rushing yards last season in University of Texas history, to Ricky Williams. And he is a pounder between the tackles. He played last year 249. He came to the combine at 233. And then he couldn't work out because of a slight stress fracture in his foot. Mm-hmm. And then when he got to his pro day, he ran in, I think he ran in the 4.5s.
Yep.
I've forgotten, but he's a big, powerful guy who's more of an O'Brien type of runner, and that he likes to go between the tackles. Miller did not, as you mentioned, give them the big plays that he'd given the Dolphins. He also is a good receiver, but he only caught 31 passes. And they have a problem because they run the ball more than any team in the league. And you got DeAndre Hopkins, and last year they incorporated the tight ends in the passing game for the first time. And they like to throw the backs, so that other wide receiver job that Will Fuller has, you know, there's only so many balls that can go around.
Sure.
And their offensive line, Dwayne Brown is not reported. He's unhappy with his contract. It has 2 years left. I don't expect we'll see him till the Jacksonville opener. He's not going to miss the big game checks. And really, he doesn't need to be here. They've got two young guys, Kendall Lamb going into his third year, who I believe will be the starting right tackle, and Julion Davenport, a fourth-round pick from Bucknell, who is playing right tackle. They're getting all the first-team reps. They have Nick Martin back, second-round pick last year, won the job. He's back at center with Greg Mance, who only missed one snap last year. Their guards, Jeff Allen at right guard, was a huge disappointment.
Right.
And he had something, the surgery, and he's been working out since 2 weeks after the season. He's lost weight. He's determined to bounce back. And their left guard, Xavier Suofilo, his first pick in the second round 3 years ago, has not been worth it. It's contract year for him. It would behoove him to stay healthy and play better than he has. And or Greg Mance could end up playing guard in his place. Dwayne Brown last year was coming off a quad injury, and he came in and missed the first four games. Then he stepped right in and played really well. So whenever he comes back, you know, they're sure he'll be playing left tackle and he'll be starting. So across the board, it'd be Brown, Suofilo, Martin at center, Jeff Allen right guard, and I think Kendall Lamb at right tackle.
Okay, interesting stuff, and certainly interesting to hear. We may not see Dwayne Brown until early September, but it doesn't sound like you're overly concerned about that. So, John, let's talk defense. You know, J.J. Watt has made a career just setting the bar impossibly high, already a future Hall of Famer, but therefore, how do we set our expectations for a guy coming off, two back surgeries and a lost season? What do you expect from him?
It was amazing last season that they finished first in defense, not just missing Watt, mm-hmm. who was healthy for two games, but Kevin Johnson, a corner, number one pick the year before in 2015, he missed 12 games counting the two playoffs. One reason, A.J. Boye, they offered A.J. $12.5 million a year, and he went for 13.5 to Jacksonville. One reason they didn't keep up in the ante is they did have Kevin Johnson coming back.
Right.
And so that the front seven should be the best in the NFL. And a guy that you know, Jadeveon Clowney, moving to the five technique, which he never liked, but he was really good, disruptive, great in the running game. And Romeo Crennel, who's now assistant head coach but has been the defensive coordinator, said there's no doubt if Clowney had been healthy those first 2 years, he'd have a whole lot more sacks in his third season. So him at right end, Watt at left end, and a guy to keep an eye on is a second-year nose tackle named D.J. Reader. Started 8 games at nose tackle and then is a rookie, fifth-round pick. They like him a lot. One reason, Vince Wilfork hasn't retired, but his contract was up. And one reason Vince wasn't coming back here is because of the progress of Reader. And if you're a nose tackle, Clowney on the right, Watt on the left, you ought to be making some plays.
Yep.
And so we think he's going to be real good. Texans really like this kid. He's 6'3", 335. He just looks like a nose tackle. And then, of course, right outside linebacker is Whitney Mercilus. And a guy last year that emerged in his second season, Bernardrick McKinney, at inside linebacker, only player in the NFL at least 100 tackles and 5 sacks. He's 6'4 and 260. And he became a pretty good pass rusher. So if you have Watt, Clowney, Mercilus, and McKinney, and then Brian Cushing, who is they're taking it easy on him going into his ninth year because he had surgery, but he doesn't play, he's not on the field as much as he used to be. Mm-hmm. But they didn't cut his salary, didn't cut him. People in the media here speculated about that, him and Jonathan Joseph, but they didn't touch him, and because they're two of the leaders of the defense. And the only question they have right now is the left outside linebacker, John Simon. They could have kept him. He signed with Indy because last year when he was healthy about half the season. He only started 4 games because they only started 3 linebackers in 4 linebackers in 4 games because of formations on offense. Mm-hmm. And so they have a guy named Brennan Scarlett, an undrafted free agent for Stanford last year, who made the roster. One of the things they've done so well here, and Brian Gain, who left to go to Buffalo for promotion and a raise, did a really good job in pro personnel. On the playoff roster last year, they had 10 undrafted free agents they'd signed. They have done a really good job of mining nuggets, so to speak, like Greg Mantz, who played so well at center. Right. Corey Morris, safety, started 8 games. He was undrafted. And the two best in franchise history, Arian Foster and E.J. Boyer. So they've had a lot of success, and we're wondering, and it's usually the second year before they fit in, who are going to be those guys this year. Mm-hmm. But the front seven, we suspect, has a chance to be the best in the league.
Wow. Okay. And yeah, so Brennan Scarlett, a name to file away. And like John said, when you and not to take anything away from him, you may be a fine player, turned into one. When you have all those other weapons, it certainly can create some opportunities. We'll see if Scarlett can be the beneficiary of that. What about Zach Cunningham? Is he, I know he had a first round grade from some people. Where do you view him? Is he kind of the Brian Cushing in waiting? And is he maybe a guy, because as impressive as I was with Bernardrick McKinney in his breakout year, the one issue he did seem to have on occasion was when he got isolated against backs and tight ends and coverage, right?
The backs were the smaller backs like James White. You know, when you're 6'4 and 260, it's hard to cover a guy that's 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's one reason they wanted Cunningham, because he's got a lot of speed. You know, he's only 235, sideline to sideline guy. He played every down at Vanderbilt, and he had to do a lot in coverage. And so they think that he can help them in some sub packages. The best tight ends were covered by E.J. Boyer, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
When they did that with the first game at Kansas City, and he covered Travis Kelce, and he did a great job, we were in shock because he'd never shown he could even come close to doing that. So McKinney, yes, that's the only weakness. He can cover a big back, he can cover a big tight end, but when it comes to guys that have a lot of speed, he struggles.
Okay.
And he doesn't come off the field. So I would imagine that Cunningham will come in for Cushing in passing situations, and he will stick with the backs, or they'll put safety on one on them.
Okay, that makes sense. John, what do you, and I'm not trying to kick a guy while he's down, but I do have to get your take because I have you. What's the feeling locally, and what do you think when you're hearing all the verbal bouquets being tossed at Brock Osweiler's direction in Cleveland's offseason?
I think he had a really good offseason here last year, and people were tossing verbal bouquets at the same time, including us in the media.
Yeah.
And Brock is always a good talker, but once he got into the games, you know, you just can't be arguing with your head coach constantly. Right. You can't have these big blow up screaming matches constantly. And they had some doozies, and we would hear about it, and we'd ask them about it, and they just kind of shrugged their shoulders and say, "Hey, it's just the coach quarterback relationship." And I hope Brock does well. You know, I also think some of the praise might be in case somebody wants to trade for him and take some of that $16 million guarantee off Cleveland's books. But we'll see. The Browns come to Energy Stadium, and there was a poll question on my radio station here, Arthur. They said, if Brock Osweiler comes to Houston and beats the Texans, is that the lowest moment in franchise history? And I'm thinking, okay, let's see. Playoff losses, some great moments in which there were famous named plays here in which they blew leads. And I'm thinking, yes, it would. It would be the low moment in franchise history.
All right. I think that does say it all about the Brock Osweiler situation. Will be interesting to watch. Just a couple more minutes here with John McClain. Follow him on Twitter if you're not doing so already, at McClain_on_NFL. And, John, you mentioned Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel, that changing dynamic. I know Vrabel's an up-and-comer in this league, and this was the way to make sure they kept him. As Crennel, I believe, gets the promotion to assistant head coach. Do you expect any changes schematically? I don't know why you'd want to change too much when you have the number one defense.
Vrabel played for Romeo at New England. He came, left the Ohio State to come to Houston to coach under Romeo. And we talked to both of them yesterday, and we're not going to know what nuances he puts in until they get in the regular season. Mm-hmm. They're not going to show us anything, but it doesn't seem to be much. Romeo, who's also going to work closely with Bill O'Brien on a lot of things, offense, defense, game management, anything he said Bill needs, but he's always there for Mike Vrabel. And he said if he sees something that he thinks he should say something to Mike, he won't hesitate because they have that kind of relationship. He said, if Vrabel needs me for anything, I'm here. I don't want him to think he's in, you know, I don't want him thinking that he is in my shadow or anything. He said he's got to be his guy, his coach, and take over this defense and make it better. I can't tell you, Arthur, how much I respect Romeo Crennel. I've covered a lot of coaches mm-hmm. since 1977, and there's none that I respect more. And the way he has seamlessly moved into this different role, he's kind of like Yoda. Everybody uses him for advice, and I think that's a great role for him at 70.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and it has been fun to watch him put his handprints on the defense. It's been an impressive couple year stretch here, of course. And just one or two more for you here quickly, John. What Jadeveon Clowney, I don't remember if he technically won the award, but gosh, if he wasn't the most improved player in the NFL, he was right up there at the top of the list. Does he have to do anything else? I know there were some rumblings he had to kind of dispel about an occasional on and off motor or the injuries. Is that part all behind him and now he can just go out and barring health be as good as he can be?
No, we haven't seen that at all. You know, he was hurt the first year, had the microfracture surgery, came back in 2015. He played, but he wasn't the same. He missed, I think, two, came out of four. Mm-hmm. And then last year they held him out of a game. But the thing about Clowney playing right end in a 3-4, which is not a sack position, he is about 6'5 and a half and 270, and every left tackle, you know, those guys are 320 and up. And he's so quick and so strong, you look up and he's just driving them backward. He still is working on pass rush moves, and he's always played the run great. You know, that famous hit against Michigan, that was a running play. He said, I don't know why people talk about me as a pass rusher. He said, I've always been better against the run, and he is tremendous and he was very disruptive, and they liked that, and he got a lot of double teams. Romeo Crennel moved him around a lot in passing situations, would let him play way out in space and right in, would stand him up at linebacker, sometime put him over the center standing up. Does the same thing with Watt. They usually play in passing situations with only two linemen on the field. So I can't wait to see how Mike Vrabel mixes and matches compared to Romeo Crennel, if he leaves guys in the same place or he moves them around like Romeo did. I suspect he'll move them around. And Clowney at right end and Watt at left end, you can't double team both of them, because then you got Whitney Merciless, then you got Bernard McKinney, and a second year nose tackle. Keep an eye out for DJ Reader.
Man, yeah, it sounds like murderer's row. I would imagine some offensive coordinator is going to be losing some sleep come the season. Last one for you, John, just quickly on the way out. I know DeAndre Hopkins wanted his extension last offseason. I have to wonder now, though, after the year he just had, does it behoove him to wait? Where is he at with the team on contract discussions and in him as he approaches a bounce-back season?
They're keeping it real quiet. His problem last year was the quarterback, not him.
Okay.
And he'll be rewarded with a contract some point before the season. I would imagine right early in camp or right before camp, and he'll be one of the highest paid receivers in the league. They told him we'll redo it with 1 year left. That's what they tell all players, other than Watt and Andre Johnson, both of whom they did it with more than 1 year left.
Okay, got it. That is the great John McClain. You can read his work in the Houston Chronicle. You can hear him all over Sports Radio 610 in Houston, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. John, a great friend of Pro Football Weekly, thank you so much for coming back on the program, and I hope you enjoy your little mini break, because it is now right on the horizon.
Hey, Arthur, thank you very much. I hope you do, too. I appreciate you having me on, as always.
Of course, the pleasure is all ours, and that is John McClain, once again, of the Houston Chronicle. Check him out on Twitter, at McClain_on_NFL. All right, awesome Texans talk with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, a longtime friend of PFW, and we thank him for being on the program, along with Joel Erickson of The Advocate, talking Saints, two fascinating teams, and hopefully you guys have a better idea about what to expect as they head into mini camp and training camps later this summer. I know I do, so big thanks to them. Big thanks to all our guests. This has been so much fun over the past couple the past handful of weeks. I really am learning a ton, and I hope you guys feel the same way. More thank yous to Loot Crate, our great sponsor. Go out and get your loot for June. Pretty awesome stuff. Alter Ego. And then one more reminder, guys, just bear with me. I appreciate your patience, because I hope most of you by now are already subscribed, but I have to do it on every podcast at the top and the bottom. So please head to iTunes and subscribe to the PFW podcast. You never miss an episode that way. And if you leave us a rating and a review, it's only going to help our cause. So we really do appreciate that. The biggest thank you, of course, goes to you guys with us every week, and we could not be more appreciative. We're having a lot of fun doing this, and looking forward to continuing our off-season recap series next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Thank you one more time. Hope you have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you very soon.